spacious skies for amber waves of blue. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We're hoping, against hope, we're going to have Josie McDonald with us, and she's from Great Britain, and she's been studying the subject of genetic engineering and how they're playing games with the food supply for a long period of time. But until she gets here, why, maybe I'll make a few comments. You know, it seems so impossible here in a land of affluence that we live in to believe that we could ever have famine. And yet, of course, if you read the Bible, why we're told that, that when they opened the fourth seal, why, I look and behold a pale horse, and the rider upon him was death, and Hades followed close behind, and power was given unto them to kill a quarter of the population of the world with the sword and with hunger and with pestilence, which is disease, and with the beasts of this world. And of course, at one time there was an abundance of food in the world. America was producing far more than we could utilize. In fact, we didn't even know how to get rid of it. We didn't know how to store it. But apparently, many of those supplies are gone. And now, increasingly, we're hearing about genetic modified foods. And well, with us is Josie McDonald, and apparently, she's done a lot of work and study on this sort of thing. Is this Josie or Jesse?
Josie.
Beg your pardon?
Josie here.
All right, fine. Will you just go ahead and tell us a little bit about what you have discovered in your studies?
Well, during the last war, we had a terrific food shortage, and government had to give us tickets for our food, and farmers weren't growing really enough to keep us going. And what happened, the research centres were then financed by government and were attached to universities or big areas that government had given them. And I went down to the Cambridge Research Station to have a look what was happening, and they had plants there planted into sections, and apparently they had found out that some of the food crops that we grew had more nutriment than others, and others had higher yields. So they crossed them. They didn't do it like they're doing now. They covered the flower heads or the heads of wheat and whatever it was they were dealing with a plastic bag. And they then cropped, took the pollen off the other side with a paintbrush and put the pollen on the other section. And as a result of all of that type of work, we quadrupled all our yield of food crops.
And of course, this was just simply the normal means of breeding a better crops, which was a fine thing to do. It was a very logical thing to do, and certainly the breeding of crops gave us tremendous increase in production. So pick up the story there.
Mm. Well, that went on and carried us through the war, it taught us a lot.
All right, hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a few moments with Josie McDonald from Great Britain as we're talking about the move towards genetic engineering away from the normal means of engineering to Franken foods.
No.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Josie McDonald, who is in Great Britain, and she was recommended to us by our friends over there because he's very knowledgeable about what's happening and the way of the new genetic modification of food that is going on and the potential really for getting into terrible difficulties as far as our food production. And I would simply point out that in years past here in the United States, we had an overabundance of food. In fact, we really many times had to hire and pay the farmers not to grow food. But in recent years, those massive supplies of food that we had seemed to be fairly well gone. And now, of course, they're using increasing amounts of corn for ethanol production. And, of course, it'll be very prosperous and profitable for the corn farmers. But Josie was telling us what happened in Great Britain during the Second World War when she lived there. And, of course, during the Second World War, England was having a lot of problems with food production. And they began, of course, to do the normal breeding of crops. And they were actually able to increase the production of their wheat and other staple crops. So you pick up the story there.
Well, that carried on. The farmers grew our food crops, and they were increasing their yields, which was very helpful. But then when we got on several years later, under this lady government who became the Prime Minister.
You're speaking of Margaret Thatcher?
That's her, yes. She told all these research centres that they had got to work together with the companies who were doing research.
And these were the companies that were involved with genetic engineering, which is trying to change the very genetic structure that God put into these various crops. Is that it?
Yes. As a result of this, the science went completely wrong. And which led to the genetic modification that we've got now, that they're trying to force down our hunt. And we also then, in 1973, we were told that we could have a vote on the joining of the European Union. Not for being governed by them, but mainly to purchase...
Hold that thought right there for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is, of course, Josie McDonald from Great Britain, and telling us, of course, what had happened during the Second World War, and then, of course, what had happened in more recent times when Margaret Thatcher told the farmers and the scientists in Great Britain they were going to have to begin working with the great corporations that were beginning to genetically modify the standard staple crops of Great Britain, and then, of course, beginning to move Great Britain into, of course, the European Union. The whole idea of the European Union initially was simply for trade. Oh, it's going to be so wonderful for trade. We're going to make so much more money. We're all going to prosper. But it really wasn't that case at all. It was all about giving up the sovereignty in Great Britain and transferring control of the economy and, of course, of the entire food production, or the control of food production, to a number of faceless bureaucrats in Strasbourg and other European centers under the control of the European Union, which, of course, is to be a totally autocratic control over the lives of the British people and, of course, the people of all of Europe. So pick up the story there, please, Josie.
Well, they went on expanding. I went to Brussels, the headquarters, and you could see diggers everywhere. They were pulling down Brussels buildings, ancient buildings, building more buildings for the European Parliament and the European Commission. The European Commission, which is now dealing with the GM, it hasn't got any members elected. It's just an appointed place, and it gives out dictatorial warnings. And in 1991, we we have a small town in this area in Wales, and lots of farming all around in Wales, right up to the hills. And it was doing very well. And I went to have a look at what was going on. And when they built the European Commission, which they were going to fill with unelected people that were governing us, they built in the office for the for Monsanto in that building. It was in touch. It could wine and dine the members there. And now we've come to this system where the Europeans are told that they can grow GM crops. But if they say they don't want GM crops, there's big trouble. Last September, it was Austria said that in their green area, away from the mountain area, they wanted to ban GM crops. They were taken to the Court of Justice in Europe.
In other words, the farmers are being forced to use genetically modified crops, even if they don't want to. And, of course, what's the objection to genetically modified crops? I mean, aren't they good crops? Isn't it a very easy means of making a better product? Or is there something basically wrong with this effort to improve on God's plan for humanity and for growing?
It's not science anymore. It's big business. And five weeks ago, the European Commission, which has not long taken over, they've put extra people in it, and they decided that they would like to discuss the development of GM and the cross-pollination and whether it's possible to grow GM along with non-GM.
And, of course, basically what you're saying is that can you grow regular crops close to genetically modified crops because they cross-pollinate? And if you don't want genetically modified crops, doesn't really matter. You plant regular seeds. The pollen comes from the genetically modified crops, and your crops then are contaminated. Is that, in essence, what you're saying?
Yes. Our Pollen Research Center has found crop seed from pollen 135 miles out over the North Sea, coming from genetically engineered crops.
Well, of course, but what's wrong with getting the cross-pollinization? Is there any harm in the genetically modified crops?
Oh, yes.
All right. Well, what is wrong
what
with
is it? What they're doing, the plant that they want to develop, they are firing, they take a sample of them to breed from. And they fire in on a oak or gold bullet the genes from viruses and bacteria.
And I think that's so important. What they're doing is they're adding the genes from viruses and bacteria into the foods that we're eating. And, of course, they many times will use the viruses as a carrier to bring in these other genes, and maybe they'll change it so that they won't react to, they'll become, have a built-in pesticide that'll kill caterpillars and other things. But what does that do to human beings down the line? It kills the caterpillars. What does it do to humans? And they have no long-term studies, do they? And the studies that they do have, well, some of them are really rather frightening, but they never let the people know about them.
One of the genes that they put in comes from the cauliflower mosaic virus, a fungus that attacks cauliflowers. And once that's put into the plant, it can take over and change and form a retrovirus which can produce symptoms similar to HIV, hepatitis B, and leukemia. And they use that one as a switch to switch on the other genes which they want to become active once they've put them in the plant. And in your country, with some of them, they use VT genes which are taken from the organisms under the earth. And they use those to spray, to form a spray on a plant to kill insects. But what they're finding is it makes the insects twice the size. but they're keeping this quiet.
Now, I'm sorry, that what are they finding? What is the complication when they use the BT?
They do the same thing. They fire it in, and they use a spray for killing insects.
All right.
It's not working properly in lots of places. And recently, one of the heads of the big biotech companies asked Ireland to grow genetically modified potatoes. And Ireland got together and told them, well, if we grow those genetically modified potatoes, you will have to do this, you have to do that, and it made so many orders for them that they got very annoyed about it. Well, the Irish then, in County Meath, they said no way would they have GM crops, and most of Ireland has said now that no, they're not going to plant GM crops.
But of course, these bureaucrats who really control things in Brussels and in Strasbourg, can't they force them to do that? In other words, I know that initially Europe didn't want the GM crops, and they simply, using the World Trade Organization and all these rules which they make up as they go along, forced GM crops when they didn't want to.
Yes. Well, there's a lot of demonstrations going on. Last year in September, I got a phone call, and the voice said, would you like to go to Switzerland? It's one of these advertised competitions. And I said, no, I don't do these competitions just to win that. He said, it's not a competition. It's the annual international gathering in Europe. And in towns surrounded by mountains in Austria, there was a four-day conference. They came from America, they came from Japan, they came from Africa, and all over. And I was asked to deliver a lecture on the day, which we did. And one of the Americans that was there owned a newspaper in America, and I gave him the speech, and he published it. But lots of people don't want it. We ask our Welsh Assembly, which is a sort of government, which we don't really need, it's an extra expense, and we said, you're in charge of the growing in Wales, we want Wales GM-free. And I always get the reply back, it would be illegal under EU to ban GM crops.
In other words, the corporations really control the bureaucracy, and they're going to tell you, it doesn't matter what the people want, this is what you're going to do. Isn't that sort of an autocratic thing to do?
Yes, this is it. And I write to the head of the Assembly and say, can you give me the date when this country signed away its right to choose its crops and what we eat? And he never replies to that because he can't give you an answer.
But of course, it really doesn't matter what the people want. They have their agenda and they're going to carry it out. Could you explain to our listeners what's wrong with GM crops? What sort of bad results, what sort of harm can they do, not only to the individuals, but to the environment?
Well, with those crops, the company makes you use their chemicals. And the worst chemical, of course, is organophosphate. Monsanto did very well producing organophosphate. Then it went into sheep dip. When we were farming and dipping sheep, a ministry member used to stand over us to see that we were dipping them properly and that we put the organophosphate into the sheep dip. It, in this area alone, it killed several farmers. Many of them got chest trouble, like my husband, and he's on inhalers. And this awful stuff is what Monsanto makes the people who buy their GM food, GM seed, it also has to buy its chemicals.
Is that Roundup you're speaking of?
It is, yes. That's organophosphate.
Right.
Organophosphate affects the nervous system and the brain as well.
Right, of course, it kills the weeds, but it also has an effect on individuals. But they don't tell you that, and everybody, it's advertised over here, a lot of people use it, but if you're not careful, you'll end up, of course, like Josie's husband. We'll be right back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Josie McDonald. We're talking about the dangers of genetically modified food. Are there any other specific things? Of course, Monsanto then put this gene into the food and, of course, into the corn and various other products. So then you could spray with Roundup, but you had to use the Roundup, and that can have some terribly toxic effects. And, of course, eventually, then, don't you get awfully large weeds? In other words, new, Roundup-resistant weeds develop down the line?
Well, we tried it once. We had a field that was no good. It had a wild grass in it that was very tough and formed a matted top to the field. And so we were told to spray it with the weed killer, which was, of course, the Roundup. And we sprayed it, and it rained 2 hours later. And it said on the covering that if it rained within 4 hours, it wasn't going to work. Well, we left it, and it did work. Everything started to die off. We then plowed the field and put in a crop of wheat, I think it was. And we underplanted it with a better quality grass for feeding cattle and clover. And the wheat came up with a very poor yield. And the grass seed that was a very high quality for feeding to our cattle and sheep. And it produced no leaves at all. And the clover didn't come up at all. And we called in the Ministry Advisory Committee that we had in those days. We haven't got it now. It used to give you advice and help you free of charge, but the government got rid of that. And he told us that the plants had leaked a toxin into the soil, and it killed the other plants that were growing there. And we had to replow it and put it down to grass later on, but we were told that the mycorrhizal fungi, which are valuable in the soil, they help the roots to take in the nutriment. It kills, if you put on this Roundup, it kills the mycorrhizal fungi. And similar to that, in one area of China, they were planting rice in a paddy field, and they put in small fish that would grow, and when they harvested the rice, they would also have bigger fish to eat or to sell. And they planted it, put the fish in, and when it came to the harvest, all the fish had died. The plants had put a toxin into the water.
And, of course, this, you would think that they would have told you ahead of time that you would really damage the earth by using the Roundup that you were being encouraged to use.
Yes.
And, of course, Roundup now is routinely used in these fields that have been planted with the BT product, BT crops. Is that right?
Yes.
And, of course, so the farmers getting on and realizing that they're really harming their soil by using this?
Yes. The other thing is, you see, they use a BT gene, which they've taken from an organism found in the soil.
Hold that. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking about, of course, the effect of Roundup on soil. And Josie was saying that certainly when her husband had sprayed their fields, the Roundup not only killed the weeds, it killed some of the funguses and other things in the soil, so that it took them a long time before they could ever really use the fields that they had sprayed for anything that was really productive. And how long did it take you to get that field back into production after you had sprayed it with a Roundup?
Oh, it took us over a year.
All right. And, of course, she was just saying that what they do is they take this this organism from the soil. Is that what they call the BT that they actually put in? Yes,
there's a mycorrhiza, uh-huh, fungus in the soil, which helps, it gets into the roots, and it helps the roots of certain types of crops to take in nutrient from the soil.
All right, fine. And of course, when you kill that fungus, why, of course, then the soil ceases to be really fertile for some time.
And clovers and related plants will just die off.
And so, basically, this is one of the hazards of using the herbicide. But of course, you were encouraged to use that, and of course, many of the farmers are being encouraged to use that now, along with these genetically modified crops. Isn't that right?
Yes. If you plant GM, you are really a slave to the company. You have to buy the chemicals that they tell you. And the whole thing is not properly looked at from the point of view of safety. We have tried and tried to get copies of the safety research belonging to the crops and the genetically modified stuff that they're selling. And we just can't get hold of it. In Europe, the European Commission is responsible for licensing GM crops. And they have a subcommittee, a European Food Safety Authority, which has one person from each member country. And the good scientists that have been fighting with us have said that when you are growing GM crops, you have to make sure that they're not near other crops or they will transfer. The scientists that do the research that don't work for these big companies, they will find that they should get a good result on a research project, and that shouldn't be taken for granted. You should do several more tests on it to make sure that you get that result.
Well, of course, the thing that worries me is what happens to the people who eat these crops over a long period of time. What do we have any long-term studies to show that they're safe for human beings?
No, we can't find any safety.
In other words, there are no long-term studies. We know what they've done. We remember here some years ago, 25 years ago, they were giving women estrogens, you know, if they looked like they were going to miscarriage, and the pregnancies, and then when their daughters matured, the daughters had cancer of the vagina, and when their daughters had cancer of the vagina, and of course now all these women have been just horribly disfigured and their lives destroyed, because of an experiment that was used back in the 1960s on the people here in America and throughout the world. Do you feel that they're experimenting on people in Europe and throughout the world today with these GM crops,
yes,
where there's no long-term studies of them?
But what they tell us is that they've had no complaints from people who are affected by eating GM crops. Well, the thing is, we have a regulation in Europe that if it contains genetic modification, it's got to be labelled. And our Food Standards Agency are meant to be in charge of examining crops and things coming into the country that are not labelled and checking whether they're GM. But government didn't give them any money to pay a laboratory to test the presence of GM. And they've also told several other organisations that it's their job as well. And I'm finding out that the test is not getting done properly. The organizations involved are just passing the buck from one to the other.
In other words, the law is they're supposed to make sure they're not genetically modified, or if they are, to label them. The government won't put the money up to get hire the people to check it. And how would you even tell whether they were genetically modified? They might not even have been grown from GM seeds, but the pollen would come from other places and contaminate the crops. Wouldn't that be true?
Yes. I mean, we had three years ago, we had trials throughout the country that government got set up. And
Why don't you hold that thought? We'll be back here in just a moment, and we'll continue that thought here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Josie McDonald. And Josie was just saying that some years ago they had some trials there in Great Britain about this sort of thing. What actually happened with those trials?
The trials were meant to be harvested, and then the crops burned. Well, what they did, a lot of them, they weren't allowed to get the crop onto the market for anybody to eat. They just measured the yields and things like that. And the big danger is, of course, that when you do the harvesting, when you get your harvester back into the shed, if you look at it, you have still got lots and lots of seed from the GM crops left in your harvester, which will spread them next time you use it on the next crop the following year. And lots of farmers haven't been doing that. Government put in their scientists to give a result on this, and they had to admit that several of the crops were dangerous to human health, and they didn't go ahead with them planting them. They took a vote, and over 80% of the population said they wanted it banned. They didn't want it. Now, we had two very good scientists at one of the institutes up in Scotland that were working on GM, and one of them, you've probably heard of him, Arpad Pusztai. He was a Hungarian who fled from the Germans in the war, then he fled from Russia, and he finished up coming to England and was a very, very good scientist. And he did some research on genetically modified potatoes on rats, and it killed the rats, so it couldn't be used on humans. And Monsanto were determined to make life hell for him.
In other words, because he told the truth, he was concerned about the fact that these genetically modified potatoes were harmful. Monsanto targeted him, and I've read that story several places, and they ruined his career, didn't they?
Yes, he's working independently now. But he always, when he was lecturing, said that you had to get rid of the crop, the weeds or anything affected you didn't want, by burning them. The thing is that they will have cross-pollinated probably some weeds or crops nearby, and it gradually spreads and spreads and spreads, and you can't get it. We've found genetic
hold that thought right there, Josie. We'll be back in just a moment with our stations. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest is Josie McDonald, and we're talking about the genetically modified crops, and really the fact that there was a Hungarian scientist in Great Britain who had actually found that the genetically modified potatoes were killing rats when they gave it to them, and Monsanto didn't want that information out, and they destroyed the career of this Hungarian scientist who was trying to protect human beings. Now, whatever happened to that genetically modified potato? Is that the one that they're still trying to get put out, the one that killed the rats or mice?
Yes. It's quite horrific what is going on. I was in Europe. I'd gone over, been invited by the European Parliament to go over, and at the time we had foot and mouth outbreak in our cattle, and I wanted to see the head of the Veterinary Commission in the European Commission, and see why we weren't using a vaccine.
And as there was an outbreak of hoof and mouth disease, could have been controlled with vaccines.
Yes.
And they wouldn't use the vaccines. They just slaughtered, millions of cattle?
Well, what happened, a lot of the milk goes to a Swiss company that makes cheese and butter and that. And they said to the farmers, if they used the injections, they wouldn't buy their milk. And so the National Farmers Union told our government that the farmers did not want the vaccine. And National Farmers Union, we now find, is one of our enemies.
They really used that as a justification. How many of the cows did they kill as a result of refusing to use the vaccine.
12 million animals.
12 million animals were destroyed.
That they killed didn't have the disease. The whole thing was a terrible farce.
And 12 million animals were killed unnecessarily. Was that all in Great Britain, or was that Great Britain and Europe as well?
Yeah.
No, was that in England?
The 12 million were in Britain alone.
12 million in Britain alone for an epidemic that really wasn't there. I mean,
it was terrible. They were bringing in, they were testing herds all over the country with sheep as well, and slaughtering the animals.
But what? Who paid for it? I mean, who compensated the farmers? Or did they receive any compensation when they destroyed their healthy animals?
Very little. The compensation was very little. They lost a lot of money, especially the pedigree herds.
Well, of course, the farmers wanted to use the vaccine, didn't they?
Well, they were told by their National Farmers Union that they shouldn't use it.
Well, why would they do something that stupid?
I mean, the National Farmers Union has millions invested in the biotech companies.
I see.
It's the worst enemy of farmers, and we're having an awful job making them realize that.
Well, of course, then, have they ever been able to replenish the herds over there?
Yes, they have got them back now. But it was a terrible thing. They, the vets would go and look at a farm, say that they had got the outbreak there, and all the animals had to be slaughtered. Somebody would be sent in to slaughter them maybe 2 days later, and frequently, because they had so many farms to cover, the carcasses would be left lying there until they had time to collect them.
And what do? Do they just burn them all?
Yes.
12 million animals. Now, what about the mad cow scare that you had over there? What was the background to that?
I think, mixed up with a shortage in the food. But we haven't got a good, honest Minister of Agriculture. We've had two people in agriculture who were absolutely useless, weren't interested in farming and knew nothing about it. In fact, we have big government trouble at the moment because there's been an exposure of most of the ministers in government were not doing their job, and their civil servants that were employed were not doing their job, and money that was meant to be paid out to farmers has not been paid out, and we don't know where the money's gone.
Well, what is happening to agriculture in Great Britain? Are the farmers able to continue being productive and making a living, or are they being forced off the farms?
A lot of them are giving up farming, and we've had an outbreak of TB in dairy cattle, which is causing a lot of trouble. We've got a veterinary laboratory in southeast England, and you can give tablets to people with TB now. I worked in Africa where TB was common, and they could cure it, and we gave the hospitals the stuff to cure it. Years and years, this veterinary laboratory has been there, and they haven't done any research for curing TB in cattle.
I see. Though they can cure it in Africa, but they can't cure it in Great Britain, is that it?
Well, yes.
I mean, there's something wrong with this story. You would think that Great Britain would be far ahead of what's going on in Africa.
No. The farms that have got TB, the animals are tested. And then if they are tested positive, they have to be slaughtered. Some of them might be bulls that are worth 10,000 guineas. And they're supposed to get a payment on it, but the payment isn't coming in sharply.
But, of course, if the farmers can't stand to have a lot of their cattle slaughtered, I mean, that takes their profit out, then they're going to have to give up farming. And then if the farmers give up farming, where's the food going to come from?
Exactly. It's going to be imported, a lot of it. And there's another problem.
And what would that problem be?
Well, we just do not know how it's grown or where it's come from at times.
In other words, you have to depend upon the government to protect you.
Yes.
But, of course, is there an increasing concern on the part of the British people that maybe they can't trust the government to do what's right? That many times the bureaucrats will, of course, do what they're told to do rather than be concerned about the health of the people?
Well, at the moment, we have a Labour government. And even the Labour members of Parliament are trying to get rid of the Prime Minister and the other ministers. And if there's another election soon in this country, this government will not get in.
Well, of course, do they have to call a government? Because over in Great Britain, they call the elections. Ordinarily, the Prime Minister calls the elections when he's lost support. And right now, though, since the parties seem to be more or less run from the top, is when they're getting rid of Tony Blair.
His own party are trying to get rid of him.
Well, let's hope that they do, because Tony Blair, of course, is a dedicated socialist. He's working very close with our administration, and I think that certainly he wants to betray the British people.
He's hardly been in the country. He's been flitting around the world and using the Queen's flight, and now he is going off again on his summer holidays. But the first thing that really got us fighting was the RBST in dairy cows.
Would you explain to our listeners what that is?
Well, it is it's a treatment that Monsanto produced.
You're not speaking of the recombinant growth hormone, are you?
Yes.
All right, that's the recombinant growth hormone that they give to cows that increases milk production, but it also, of course, it creates all sorts of additional problems, both for the cows and the humans who drink the milk. So would you like to tell us about that?
Well, Monsanto came to our nearest town here and invited farmers and vets to attend a meeting. And they had their chief scientist addressing the meeting. And it was held in a local hotel, and we turned up, and they were all welcoming us, their directors and their scientists, and they put our names at the table and a file in front of it for us and a pen and everything. And would we like coffee or would we like a drink? And we said, yes, please. And then the chief scientist got up and spoke and advertised his BST, that you injected this into a cow and the cow would give 20% more milk. And you didn't need to give her any more food. Well, they were all practical people at that meeting, and they said, there's no such thing as a free lunch in farming. We don't believe this. And we got thrown out of the meeting. And I started getting very worried about it. We were farming at the time. We had a pedigree herd of Welsh black cattle. And I had exported the first Welsh black cattle into Europe. And they went to Germany and started breeding them over there. And we were lucky. We didn't have any illnesses. But I didn't fancy having to inject cows every fortnight to make them give more milk. And this injection had to be given in the tail head, and it formed a scab. But you still had to put the needle in every fortnight in the scab on the poor old cow's tail head. And I started to fight against it and collect a petition and to take to Europe. It was no good taking it to our government. They haven't got the power, because Europe can overrule them.
And what you're really saying is the European Union, it doesn't matter what the people of Great Britain want, doesn't matter what even the British Parliament wants, no. Because the power no longer less lies with them. And, of course, the same thing's happening here in the United States. That's what the North American Union that George Bush has already agreed to take us into is all about, where we will unite Mexico and the United States and Canada. So you're just a long ways ahead of us. Well, anyway, what happened? You know, you went, of course, over to Europe to try to do something about the fact that they're forcing this on the farmers. What happened?
Well, I found out quite a lot about it. And I found that some of the research had been done in Holland and some in Canada, and hold of it. And government called me in and asked me why I was objecting, and I told them. And I thought, well, it's no good talking to government because they're right in the hands of Monsanto. The Prime Minister has a consultant, and he is Lord Sainsbury, who owns a biotech company, and he's donated Blair's pocket money, given him £11 million, bribery. So there's no point in taking it to our government. So I thought, well, I'll collect a big petition and I will take it to Europe. If they're making the rules, then I'll go to them. And I went over to Europe. I had got hold of the research papers. Some were from Holland and some were from France and some were from Germany. And I phoned my member of the European Parliament and said, I want to come and see the head of the European Parliament. And he said, I'll make inquiries and ring you back. And the next day he rang me back and said, next Thursday in Strasbourg. Well, the European Parliament, the last week of every month, moves its files, its secretaries, its members, all the way down to Strasbourg for the whole week.
Yeah, that's where that big building is. That's a replica of the Tower of Babel, isn't it? The incomplete Tower of Babel?
Something like that. But this costs us a lot of money, but they don't care. And you'll never find a member of the Parliament in the Parliament on a Friday. They all start going home on a Thursday afternoon every week. But the MEP, he got me a meeting with the head of the European Parliament. He was an Englishman at the time, and he had a farm, which was about the best time we ever had in Europe. And I was taken to lunch, and then two men came with pistols sticking out of their pockets and took me up to the top floor to the head of the European Parliament. And he was standing by a copy of the Farmers Weekly on his desk. And he said to me, you see, I read your letters and articles in the Farmers Weekly. And I couldn't help it. I said to him, thank goodness I'm speaking to somebody properly educated. And we had a good laugh. And he was very useful. He said, well, this is a job for the commission. I will give you a note, and you can have a meeting with the European Commission. So I was taken the next morning to the commission, and the Norwegian was the person in charge of dealing with this Monsanto product. And I presented the 32 effects on the cow which I had unearthed, and the fact that the milk was carcinogenic.
And the milk is carcinogenic. This is the fact that the American people don't understand, because most of our milk we get here, about 70% of it is actually produced, you know, with this recombinant bovine growth hormone, RBGH, and it's carcinogenic, and they know it's carcinogenic.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's we then found that Holland was interested, and Germany and some of the other countries. And the commission called a big meeting then, and we went and we put the case. And we won. And then, at the end of that week, after we had got it banned, they decided that it was being produced in Germany. And I happened to go to a meeting in the Parliament and invited to lunch at the Prime Ministers from the different countries, their table with them. But sitting next to me was the man who had set up Monsanto's manufacturing of the BST. And I said to him, why aren't you getting rid of it? He said, well, they built the factory in an area of very poor people, and it gave us a lot of jobs for the people.
And so it doesn't matter that it produces milk that's carcinogenic.
No,
providing jobs. I suppose it really didn't matter what the committee came up with, though. That they haven't stopped the use of it, have they?
Yes, they banned it.
Oh, they have stopped the use of it.
Oh, yes. And
because they sure haven't stopped the use of it here.
No, I know. And
the average American has no idea.
We stopped it. We banned it. And the Germans said, all right, they would stop producing it, and we got rid of it. What it was, they actually manufactured the drug from E. coli. They took growth hormone from cows and mixed it up with E. coli bacteria, and the E. coli bacteria multiplied it. And then they said they extracted the bacteria and destroyed them.
And of course, we've been able to get you over here because, you know, the average American has no idea what you've said. And of course, here in the United States, there's nobody who's been able to block the use, and it's in most of our dairy herds. And the average American has never heard what you've had to say. Our guest has been Josie McDonald from, and she's calling, of course, talking to her. Are you in Wales? You live in Wales, Josie?
Yes. We retired from farming now.
All right, wait just a moment. We'll be back to wrap up the program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Josie, we've got three minutes to wrap up the program. So what are the thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I got a phone call from Canada asking if we would help them to get rid of it. And apparently, the American farmers were being paid by Monsanto to take it up to the borders at weekends and sell it over the border into Canada. And Canada decided they didn't want it either. And they had a Senate inquiry. And by this time, a veterinary chemist had joined me in the campaign. And he went over. We were farming and I couldn't leave the cattle. And he went over to the Senate inquiry in Canada. We not only got it banned there, it exposed the terrible corruption. The licensing authority in America had been persuaded to put on four Monsanto people on their committee when they were licensing this product. And the FAO and World Health Organization combined had six members of Monsanto on that committee when they said that it was perfectly safe for humans.
And knowing full well that it wasn't, and knowing exactly what you'd found, are they using it in Africa and other countries, you know, that the recombinant growth hormone?
Well, you can't get those things out in Africa very easily. I got a letter out of the blue from a veterinary college in South Africa saying Monsanto were telling them to tell the local farmers, African farmers, to use BST. Well, those farmers only had one cow, and it was absolutely terrible because Monsanto said that if you were going to inject cows in their first lactation, you had to be careful and get a vet to check it. Well, I mean, in Africa, they were probably 100 miles from the vet.
I know. Well, so basically, they've targeted the United States, where the victims of a massive experiment, which is going to result in hundreds of thousands of deaths, and the average American has no idea. I congratulate you for what you were able to do over there. I do hope we can get you onto one of our other programs sometime, and because I want the rest of our listeners to hear your story.
Right.
And thank you for all you've done, and thank you for having the courage to go over there and buck the system, and at least you've protected the people of Europe and Great Britain.
We had a very big demonstration in Austria 5 weeks ago. The Commission decided they would stay in Vienna and have three nights there while they debated the coexistence of GM crops.
We're out of time. God bless you. Thanks so very much.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Josie McDonald, who lives in Wales and has led the battle in both Great Britain and in Europe to ban the recombinant bovine growth hormone, which, of course, is known to increase the incidence of cancer in the people who drink it. They know that. But isn't it interesting? You'll never hear that in the United States. You need really to get the books and the material we have here. We have a four-tape set on genetic engineering. We have the book Seeds of Deception by Jeffrey Smith. we have another book, Beware GMOs, and it tells you the story about the poor scientist who found out that the genetically altered potatoes that they wanted them to grow killed the rats that they were using them on. And, of course, what was the reward? His career was destroyed. Could there be anything evil enough that they would want to give us food that would kill us and produce cancer? Well, you need to get our material on population control. You need to get our population control agenda monograph. It's up on our webpage. Go there, radioliberty.com. Pull it down. You can get it for nothing. You need to get my talk on either DVD or VHS, Planned Population Reduction, pointing out that we've killed 100 million people since 1973 by allowing malaria to continue to spread throughout the world rather than use DDT, which is the safest insecticide ever known, and we've replaced it with insecticides and pesticides, which are much, much more dangerous. You need to get our four-tape set on population control. We'll tell you the true story of the outlawing of DDT. Why was it outlawed? Because it was saving so many lives. You need to go to my webpage and see the pictures of the Georgia Guidestones where they're inscribed in eight different languages on the Ten Commandments from the dark side. Number one is maintain the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature. Maintain the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature. That means they're going to have to eliminate over 90% of the world population. And people say that couldn't be true. Let me suggest, if you doubt that, you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And ask for the UNESCO courier, as Jacques Cousteau's remarks. We'll send it to you free of charge. Where Jacques Cousteau says, we're going to have to eliminate 365,000 people a day. 365,000 people a day. Why? There are too many people in the world. You need to get our four tape set on the New Order of the Barbarians or the copies of Dr. Donald MacArthur's testimony before the House Appropriations Committee in 1969. We talks about how they want $10 million to create a new disease that will not affect the immune system. In other words, will destroy the immune system so it can't respond. And, of course, they can make the new disease in 10 years, and it may very well be a new means of mass killing. But they want to make it anyway. Understand that it was 10 years later when the first cases of AIDS appeared, although they weren't diagnosed for 2 years after that. The first cases appeared then 10 years after they asked for $10 million to create a disease just like AIDS. Understand that there really are evil and wicked people out there. You need to go to our website, radioliberty.com. Radioliberty.com. You need to get Jeffrey Smith's book, Seeds of Deception. You need to get the book, GMOs, Beware Genetically Modified Foods. The four-tape set on genetically modified foods. You need to get a copy of this interview you just heard with Josie McDonald. Understand that they know that the milk from the genetically modified cows increases the incidence of prostate and other cancer. They know that. Why do you think cancer is going up so much in America? And they know exactly what they're doing. Because, you see, we're involved in a battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And there are people out there who know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to know. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty until Monday. May the Lord be with you.